She gave him a scratch on the head and closed the door. Bedtime. He seemed to agree, because he beelined through the kitchen and down the hallway to her bedroom. She stared after him, smiling. And then her smile widened, and she wanted to whoop and jump up and down because of what Mary had said. She was still holding her phone, so she texted Gina, hoping that she hadn't screwed anything up, that she could make this right.
I'm the biggest idiot. Didn't get email last October about Sharon. Want to see you. Next weekend still okay? Hope to hear from you. Sorry for mixed messages.
She studied the message for a few moments, heart pounding, then pressed send. Would Gina respond? Or was she hurt because Meg had pushed her away? Again. She'd find out either way. If Gina didn't respond, then that was an answer too. One Meg didn't want, but one she'd have to accept, if nothing else. She'd at least asked. Her desk chair at work needed to be more comfortable, Meg decided, as she sank into it at lunch after a busy morning. She had 30 minutes between appointments, so she checked her phone for messages. She'd been both dreading and obsessing about those since she'd sent the text to Gina the night before, and this time was no exception. No calls, but there was a text from Gina. Meg took a deep breath and opened it.
Hiya. On a little assignment. Next weekend is awesome. If too expensive the weekend after, fly into LAX. I'll call when I can.
She read it a few more times just to make sure she wasn't playing a game of wishful thinking with herself. And then she went to the front desk. Ginny finished the phone call she had taken and looked up at her.
Is it possible to clear my schedule next weekend, Thursday through Sunday?
Meg used her most hopeful expression. Ginny's eyes twinkled and she smiled.
Already done. Meg stared at her. It's easier to fill a schedule than clear it, so I took the liberty with yours a couple weeks ago.
Is there anything around here that I actually know?
Afraid not, Anna said as she printed something out. She handed it to an older man with a small leashed Yorkie in his arms that Meg recognized as one of Mark's patients.
Thanks, Mr. B. See you next time.
He smiled and set the dog on the floor and took the paperwork. Meg looked back at Ginny.
Thanks. I had a feeling.
She was still smiling, and Meg grinned and shook her head. She returned to her office and called up flight information from Denver to Los Angeles. Gina was probably tired of being with her folks, and she wanted some time alone. Her fingers hovered over the keyboard. Alone time. With her. Oh, God. Was she ready for that? She wasn't sure. Where would she stay? With Gina at her apartment? That thought made her both hot and cold in all kinds of ways. She'd rent a car. That way she'd have an escape route if something went wrong. She found a flight leaving Thursday afternoon that would have her in LA around 5 at a good price. She chose it and paid, then emailed the itinerary to Gina, and then she made a reservation for a car rental. She could always get a hotel room when she got there. What did Gina expect? What did she herself expect? What exactly was she doing? She pushed away from her desk and stood. She wasn't sure, yet. But right now, things felt pretty good.
Hey, Doc, said Kelly from the doorway. I've got your 1 o'clock set up, whenever you're ready.
Well, thanks for making sure I can pretend to be useful.
She smiled and walked after Kelly, glad that she had something else to think about the rest of the day, which went nonstop until nearly 6. She collected her things from her office and went back out to the lobby, where Ginny was locking the front door. She put the emergency hours sign up.
Thanks for everything, Meg said.
Ginny turned and regarded her with a maternal expression. I hope things work out. She returned to the counter.
We'll see.
Meg was about to say goodnight when she glanced through the front windows. Haley stood in the parking lot, talking to a woman she didn't recognize next to a compact blue SUV. From Haley's body language and expression, she was tense. The woman's back was to Meg, but she turned her head to the left, like she was looking for something. Then she turned back to Haley. It was long enough for Meg to see her black eye.
Who's that outside with Haley?
Ginny looked up from her computer.
Oh, Lord, she said, gaze riveted on the windows. That's her mother.
Meg set her satchel on the counter next to the computer monitor, opposite Ginny. She could wait a few minutes. She watched Haley, who was making emphatic gestures like she was pleading. Laura shook her head and looked like she was wiping something on her cheek. Tears, Meg guessed.
Hey, Doc.
Meg turned at Rick's voice.
Can you come back here for a minute? I'm not sure about this chart.
Meg looked over at Ginny, who gave her a nod, signifying she'd keep an eye on things, and Meg went into the back. What's up?
It's one of Doc Mark's canine patients. She was spayed today, but I'm not sure about something he put on her chart.
She followed him into the adjoining room, where the recuperative kennels were, and pointed out the dog and handed her the chart.
Is that the right dosage for her pain meds?
She looked it over. Oh, here's the problem. Typical Mark scribble. Give me a pen. He took one out of his pocket and handed it over, and she clarified the number on the chart. I checked Daisy earlier, and Mark told me that's a dosage. He just doesn't always write it as beautifully as I do. She smiled and handed the pen back.
Thanks, Doc.
Meg nodded and started back to the front, when Ginny burst through the swinging door, expression worried.
Meg, Bill's here.
She gestured with her head toward the front entrance, and Meg rushed past her into the lobby. A stocky, balding man in jeans and a plaid western-cut shirt was facing Haley, and he stabbed his finger at her face, his thick mustache moving with the motion of his lips. She could just hear him shouting through the glass. Laura was standing to the side, crying, arms wrapped around herself. A big pickup truck was parked next to the SUV. Give me the keys, Meg called back to Ginny, who tossed them at her. She caught the set one-handed, found the correct key, and jammed it into the lock. She jerked the door open.
Stay away from her, Bill was saying. She doesn't need you corrupting her life.
Haley, Meg said, breaking Bill's monologue. Everything okay? She didn't respond, but the look in her eyes told Meg what she needed to know. You need to leave. Meg directed the command at him.
Who the hell are you?
None of your damn business, but you're not welcome here, so leave. She glared at him, daring him to challenge her.
I have as much right to be here as anybody, he said,
and his voice was low and dangerous. Please, Laura said, trying to intervene. Let's just go. Mom, you're not leaving with him.
You shut your mouth, Bill barked. You're a damn abomination. You don't get to tell anybody what to do.
Haley recoiled as if she'd been slapped. That's enough. Meg moved and put herself directly between Haley and Bill. Time to go, she said. She added a hard, flat stare. Men like this were the source of years of pain for everybody in their lives. She'd be damned if she'd let him get away with spreading his shit here.
Doc, everything okay?
Rick stood in the doorway to the clinic, holding the front door open. Ginny pushed past him. It will be once this gentleman here leaves. Meg put extra sarcasm on gentleman and didn't take her eyes off his face.
Laura, come inside,
Ginny said in a tone that left no room for compromise. Bill's face flushed deeper red.
Don't you dare,
he turned to Laura, his fingers curling and uncurling into fists.
Laura,
Ginny said, let's get you cleaned up. I'm fine. She wiped her eyes again. Her hand trembled. Ginny went and stood next to her, not taking her gaze off Bill. Time to go, Meg said to him, keeping her voice level, though her rising anger made it difficult. He straightened, as if he could make himself more physically imposing.
You a dyke, too?
The words shot from his mouth like bullets.
Shut up, Bill, Haley said.
He ignored her and addressed Meg again.
You are, aren't you, fucking dyke? Probably screwing Haley. Probably can't keep your hands off each other, homos.
That's enough. Adrenaline surged through Meg's veins, and she struggled not to punch him.
Get the hell out of here, dyke.
Shut up, Haley snapped. Don't you talk to her.
Bill lunged past Meg's shoulder, knocking her out of the way. He grabbed Haley's arm.
Don't you talk to me like that.
He released her arm with a hard push, and she stumbled backward. He followed and shoved her again.
Fucking dyke.
He pushed her again, before Meg and Rick were able to get between him and Haley. He started swinging, and one of his fists caught Rick in the arm. Rick yelped and fell against the one car parked in the front, and Bill started toward Haley again.
Get inside,
Meg directed her. But Bill changed his direction and moved to cut off Haley's path to the clinic. Both Meg and Ginny responded and blocked him. Rick took up a position behind him.
Inside,
Meg said to Haley again, keeping her eyes on Bill. A siren sounded a few blocks away, but nobody moved. Finally, Haley started toward the entrance. The siren sounded closer, and Bill dug into his pocket and pulled out keys. He strode over to the pickup truck.
I'll see you at home,
he said to Laura as he got in. He slammed the door, gunned the engine a few times, and peeled out of the parking lot. "You okay?" Meg asked Rick. But Ginny gestured to Haley, who was standing with her back against the clinic's wall, hands on her thighs, head down.
"I'll deal with Rick. Go check on her."
Meg hurried over. "Hey," she said. Haley didn't look up. She just shook her head. "I'm going to take you to the hospital." She jerked her head up. "I'm fine. I'd prefer to hear that from a doctor." A police car pulled into the parking lot, and Ginny went over to talk to the officer who got out. A big, broad guy with shoulders like a linebacker. Meg had seen him around, a decent local cop. She groaned inwardly. It was about to be a very long evening. Behind her, Laura started crying again. Chapter 22. Haley gave her statement to Officer Nettles, the cop with the linebacker shoulders. Meg waited for her outside the exam area, listening to their voices, ready to go in if Haley sounded like she needed it. She'd already been x-rayed and checked over, and Meg was glad for the paper trail, but even more appreciative that Ginny had caught what happened with the video function of her phone. The sound wasn't too great, but at least they had a visual record, too. Last she checked, Ginny and Laura were seated in the waiting room down the hall with Beth, and Meg was glad about that, too, because she wasn't sure what to say to someone like Laura, who'd been roped into such a bad situation and who might end up right back in it. On the plus side, Laura had given a statement to police, too, and had admitted that her black eye came from Bill. She hadn't pressed charges, though, and Meg didn't understand that, had a hard time grasping why so many women didn't leave their abusers. They'd been brainwashed in a way, Ginny had said, when Laura was in the bathroom at the clinic, cleaning up before Meg took Haley to the hospital. And they're in the most danger when they do leave. So Meg had left Laura to Ginny, because what she really wanted to do was drive out to the lazy R&T and put a few bullets in Bill Northrup and drag his sorry carcass out onto the prairie and leave him to the coyotes and vultures, which would only start a whole new set of problems, her dad would say, though he'd understand the feeling. Haley emerged from behind the curtain, and she looked so tired and so drained that Meg wondered if she'd be able to walk down the hall. "Your turn," she said, and she managed a little smile, but it was forced. "Do you remember where the waiting room is?" Haley nodded.
"See you in a bit."
A bit translated to about 20 minutes, and then Meg thanked Officer Nettles and left him writing his notes in the hallway, where they'd moved since the ER might need the space Haley had occupied while she was getting checked over. Ginny got up from her chair as Meg approached and met her a few yards away from the rest of the group. Meg's had been the last statement Officer Nettles took, and it was nearly 9, and she was tired and wrung out. But from Ginny's expression, there was a little more to say.
"What's the plan?" Meg asked.
"Laura's coming to my place," she frowned.
"Is Trent in town?"
"Yes, and if she stays longer and Trent has to go on the road again, my two big football player nephews are going to stay over, and they might bring friends."
Meg smiled, but it was forced. "Okay, what do you need from me?"
"I think you've done enough."
She looked past Ginny's shoulder at Haley, who was slumped against Beth, her head on Beth's shoulder, their fingers entwined. Laura was seated on Haley's other side, and she looked like she might be sleeping.
"You sure?"
Ginny rubbed Meg's arm, comforting.
"Haley will need you later, as a witness. She's going to file a restraining order against him."
"Good. Does he know where she lives?"
"She doesn't think so, but Beth called a couple of their friends who are going to stay over with them for a few days."
"Even better. How about you? You okay?"
"As well as can be expected. I called the boys and let them know what happened. I'll call Brady tomorrow. Bill could show up when he's doing his part-time shifts."
Meg smiled again, this time easily at Ginny's term for the 3 full-time male vets at the staff. "So can I go home now?" She sounded plaintive, trying to inject some humor into what had been a shitty evening.
"Yes."
She gave Ginny's shoulder a squeeze and went over to Haley, who sat up when she saw Meg approach.
"Hey," Meg said. "If you need to take a couple days off, that's fine. Just check in with us, okay?"
"I think I'd prefer to come in,
if that's what you want to do. But if you're not up to it, that's fine. Just make sure somebody knows where you are."
She looked at Beth. "Same for you. Let your friends and family know what happened and stay plugged into the network. Make sure they know what he looks like and what he drives. Beth nodded.
Will do.
Thanks. Call if you need anything, whatever time it is, both of you.
Yes, ma'am,
Haley said. Get some rest. Meg left before she said anything else because she was tired and still pissed, and that was a bad combination. She needed to go home and detox a little, try to get things into perspective, and hopefully get some sleep. A large Starbucks coffee morning, Meg decided, and whatever coffee she could get from the ranchers out here. She sipped as she drove and thought about the night before, and then the time her dad and Jackson had a talk with a local man who had beat up his wife. Meg had been 17 and she knew the family. Everybody did, and everybody knew what probably went on behind the doors of their ranch house, until one day the wife showed up at the DR, bruised and bloodied. She stayed with them for a few days, and then Alice packed her up into her truck and drove off. When Alice got back a couple days later, the woman wasn't with her. Salt Lake City, she heard Alice say to her dad in the kitchen, family. Meg pulled into the first driveway, and Moonshine pushed himself into a sitting position and looked out the windshield. She steered to the front of the house, and as she got out, she wondered what had happened to that woman. She hoped she was okay, and that she'd found a better road.
Hey, Doc,
said the man who came out of the house. He wore an ancient trucker cap, and some of his steel gray hair stuck out under the sides. He'd already been out. Meg saw in the mud that caked his boots and streaked the lower part of his jeans. He carried a rifle, and he held it with the barrel pointed down. Jim, what's up? She looked at the gun. He shook his head.
Damn coyote messing with some of my cows, trying to catch the little bastard.
Any luck?
Not yet.
Happy hunting. So let me check the new arrival.
She's a looker. Beautiful coat already,
he beamed.
But come on in first. Have some coffee.
An offer I won't refuse. She followed him inside, and once she was properly caffeinated again and after she had washed her hands, she checked the foal. The mother standing nearby watching.
She is beautiful, Meg said as she appraised the deep russet coat. How's her personality?
Like her mom's. Shy but okay once she gets to know you. Though she seems to have taken to you just fine.
Jim chewed a piece of straw and pushed his trucker hat back on his head. The foal nuzzled Meg's hand, her nose softer than velvet.
I think you've got a sweetheart here.
Meg stroked her head. She'd read through Roy's notes. He checked the foal and the mare the day after the birth with his usual thoroughness. Any problems?
Nope. She stood the first hour and walked around a little. Mama took good care of her. So did Doc Roy. He checked Mama, too.
Meg straightened, and the foal rubbed her head against her leg like a dog might.
That's some horse magic you've got there, Jim said with a laugh. Doc Roy said to be careful when you got out here, because little Daisy May might follow you home.
Meg smiled and stroked the foal's head. She's a lover. Roy said she was doing fine and the tests all looked good. Mom looked good too, but let me have a little talk with her. She looked over at Jim and winked. He put his hands up in mock surrender and shook his head.
Go ahead with the girl stuff.
Meg turned to the mare and let her sniff her hands again. It's okay, Mom. I'm just the doctor. Let's have a look. She checked the mare's udder for signs of mastitis, then checked further back for signs of discharge. A few minutes later, she stepped back. Any signs of crampiness or anything else going on?
Nope.
Excellent. Let's have a look at Daisy May. Meg ran her hands along the foal's sides, then belly. She checked for signs of umbilical hernia and infection around the umbilicus. Then she palpated the foal's legs, checking for enlarged and hot joints.
Okay, Jim, I want to take her temperature, make sure she's not running a fever. I'll need a little help.
She may not be your friend anymore after this,
he said with a chuckle. We'll find out. Meg retrieved a thermometer and petroleum jelly from the truck. She snapped on a pair of gloves and prepared the thermometer, while Jim stroked the foal's head.
All right, Daisy May. Sorry about this, but we've got to make sure you're not running a fever.
A couple minutes later, Meg took the reading. 100.3, normal. Good work, Daisy May. Be right back, she said to Jim. She cleaned up at the truck, then returned to the stall. Daisy May seemed to have forgiven her because she nuzzled Meg's hand again. Jim laughed.
Still friends, even after all that.
Don't tell Roy. He likes to think he's the most popular vet with the babies. She stroked Daisy May's head. You know what to keep doing. Clean and dry, some alfalfa for mom to get her calcium up, and increase the grain, since she seems to be doing all right on it. She needs about 3% of her weight daily in feed, and 3 times her usual water intake. She stopped and grinned. You've been through this before. Give us a call if something doesn't seem right. He grinned back.
Will do. Thanks, Doc.
Meg gave some final pats to the mare and gently rubbed the foal's head between her ears. Welcome to the world, Daisy May. Go on out there and kick some ass. Jim chuckled and motioned her to precede him out of the barn.
Thanks, Doc.
Yep, see you later. He waved as she climbed into the cab, and she waved back after she'd buckled up and started the engine. Moonshine grunted and regarded her with canine disappointment. Hold on, buddy. She maneuvered back to the main road, drove a few miles and turned onto a dirt lane that would take her to the next ranch, a mile farther on. She stopped and went around to the passenger side so she could lift Moonshine out. He ambled over to a fence post and sniffed, then moved on to the next one. She watched him for a while, the morning sun warm on her back and early summer in the breeze that flowed over the sage-dotted landscape. Meg leaned back against the hood of the truck and scanned the sky for clouds. A few to the north, clustered like a middle school clique. As the day wore on, there'd be more, but right now, the pale blue expanse overhead was mostly unmarred. She turned her face up to the sun and closed her eyes. A meadowlark sounded somewhere to her right, and she inhaled, then exhaled. Out here, she was just a very small part of a very big world, and somehow, that decreased yesterday's weight. She hadn't had a chance to talk with Sean or her dad about what happened, and she wasn't sure she wanted to dump it on Gina, since their reconnection was still so new. Gina had a lot of her own stuff to deal with, and it wouldn't do her much good to worry about an asshole in Laramie. She smiled, thinking about Gina, though the upcoming visit made her nervous. Would things be weird between them? Would they be uncomfortable? Or would they be able to pick up and continue on, like Sean's dad and stepmom? And what about more physical things? Was that even an option? Stop it, she muttered. No sense thinking about things like that, because it left her frustrated and more anxious about seeing Gina. Moonshine rubbed his head against her leg, and she looked down at him. Ready? If dogs could shrug, he would have. Let's go, pal. He trotted to the passenger side of the truck and waited for her to open the door and lift him in. All right, Your Majesty. On to the next stop. She shut the door and went back around to the driver's side. Ready? She asked him. He grunted and got comfortable on the seat. Meg grinned and started the engine. Meg called Ginny on her way back to the clinic to check on things there. Satisfied, she hung up and sang along with Tracy Bird, the last few miles into town as uneventful as Ginny said the day was. She pulled into the parking lot behind the building and automatically scanned for either Laura's SUV or Bill's truck. The tightness between her shoulders eased when she didn't see them. Haley's Ranger was parked next to her own pickup, and Meg hoped that things had settled down and that Bill would back off. She unloaded, then took Moonshine over to the patch of grass nearby they used to walk canine patients. A few minutes later, she put him in her own truck, then went inside. Honey, I'm home, she said when she went into the lobby from the back. Sandra laughed. How was work, dear? Long day. Where's my cocktail? Ginny gave her a disapproving look over the rims of her glasses, but a smile twitched at the corners of her mouth. Everything still good? Meg handed a stack of files to Sandra, but she directed the question at Ginny. Yes. Okay. I'll be in my office for a few if anybody needs me. She went through the swinging door into the back and almost ran into Haley. Oh, sorry, Doc. How are rounds? Long, Meg studied her. How are you? Okay, I guess. Meg's phone beeped with a text message, and Haley glanced at her belt holder, then back at Meg's face. Meg didn't check it. Things okay at the house? She asked. Yeah, and thanks for everything. You're welcome. And remember, you can call me anytime. Don't feel weird about that. Beth has my number, right?
Yes, ma'am. I'm really sorry about—
Meg stopped her with a gesture and motioned her to step away from the door as Gary brushed past into the lobby, Do not be sorry. This is not your fault. Shit happens. I'm glad we were all here to help. Haley nodded.
Me too.
She said so softly Meg wasn't sure that's what she actually said. I'll be in my office for a few. She gave Haley's shoulder a gentle squeeze and went to get things organized for the next day before she went home. She had nearly finished, and she was putting some papers into her satchel when someone knocked on her door, which was partially open. Yeah? Roy came in.
How are you doing?
He was wearing a lab coat, but it was unbuttoned and the front of his dark blue shirt was covered with white animal hair. Tired. I checked in on Jim's foal. Everything looks great. He nodded.
Good to hear. Speaking of checking in, I called some police friends of mine. They're going to keep an eye on things.
Well, don't you just know everybody in town? She gave him a smile and shut her computer down.
Maybe. It helps for situations like this, and Northrop's not a popular guy, so there's a little more incentive there.
Thanks for doing that. He inclined his head.
Let me know if you need anything.
I will. He gave her a final nod and left. Meg rubbed her eyes and glanced at her own watch. Almost 6. She picked up her satchel and closed the door behind her before she went back to the lobby. Ginny had already locked up for the evening, and Sandra had gone home. I'm out of here, she announced. Ginny took some papers off the printer before she responded.
Good, get some rest. You look like the wrong end of a rodeo.
Meg smiled. Everything okay at your place?
She's still with us, if that's what you're asking. And you don't need to worry about it. For once, let the rest of us take care of some things.
I told you, it's the ranch kid's curse. We're all born with extra responsibility. Ginny's expression softened.
Meg, things are under control. I'll let you know if I think there's anything for you to do.
All right, thanks. Good night, Ginny.
Good night. Night, Doc.
Haley said as Meg walked through the back to the exit.
See you tomorrow.
You bet. Meg left, but before she slid into the driver's seat of her truck, she remembered the text. She checked her phone. She'd missed an even earlier text from Sean. The most recent was from Gina. Meg's heart sped up a little. Hey, cowgirl. Running around on this assignment. I'll call you soon. Hope you're all right. Got an email off to you, though. She smiled. Much better now, she said as she texted a quick message back that said not to worry about it and to call when she had the time. She started the engine. Chapter 23 Meg hung up with Sean and set her phone on the coffee table. She'd updated both Sean and Alice on what had happened, and she was secretly relieved that her dad was in town at some dinner because Alice was always a voice of reason and knew when it was appropriate to freak out and when it wasn't. Meg did not want a freak out, and Alice would make sure that Stan didn't. Meg wondered yet again why those two hadn't hooked up. They'd make a great match. Moonshine came in from the kitchen and pulled himself onto the couch. He put his head on Meg's thigh and she laughed. We should all have lives like you, she said as she stroked his head. He grunted again and Meg smiled. Glad you agree. She petted him a little longer, then carefully moved his head and went into her office to check her email. She sat down and logged in, thinking that it was a relief, not feeling like she was avoiding anything with Gina, and it was nice to do something other than worry about Haley. Several messages from colleagues and various veterinary listservs greeted her. She checked through them to make sure she wasn't missing anything important. Sean had sent her a link to a funny story, and then she saw a message from Gina sent yesterday. She hadn't had time to check her email all day. It made her breathe faster. The subject line was, "Got your itinerary, thanks." Howdy, cowgirl. Thanks for the itinerary, and thanks for the phone message last night. I wasn't sure what was going on with you, but I felt that maybe I'd pushed too hard, and I wanted to give you some space. The last thing I would ever want to do is make you uncomfortable about anything. I'm on assignment, as you know. It's outside LA, but still kind of a pain in the ass. I hope to call you this weekend. Speaking of LA, I'm basing there at the moment and not Sacramento. I still have my apartment in LA, and I'm not sure I'd consider it a home base, since it looks more like those business hotels where people live for a week at a time while on corporate bullshit trips. But God help me, as much as I love my parents, I really need some space. I can just see you laughing at that. Not laughing, Meg said to the screen, but smiling.
And I decided to do a little bit of journalism, since I felt like I was starting to wallow in a bunch of crap that wasn't making me feel any better. The work is helping. Don't worry, okay? I'm keeping an eye on my state of mind. Which brings me to this message. I don't do so well sometimes on the phone about certain things. You know that about me. So I'm writing this down and sending it to you in hopes that it won't make you any more uncomfortable than it seems you were. But I need to say some things to you, and writing them down makes me feel as if there's something solid out there with my thoughts. That it's not just spoken words that disappeared into the ether after they were voiced. I hope that makes sense. Meg frowned and kept reading. First, I've actually filed a story with the Home Office about what happened. They'll probably title it something lame like A Journalist's Personal Experience with Terrorism. I think Sans Wings, A Journalist's Trip Through the Air and Against a Car, sort of captures it better. But it might not have the mass appeal we're hoping for. Ha ha. Anyway, it kind of helped to write it, I think. I remember most of what happened. Some of it I don't want to remember. But apparently I don't get to choose what sticks and what doesn't. Such is the way of these things. Second, I heard from the big bosses. They've allowed me a little more leave, and allowed me the leeway to take some little assignments and fluff pieces, since I sustained physical injuries and might have some emotional shit to deal with. Which means I have a few options. I can apply for the stateside job I've mentioned. Word on the street is I have a really good chance of getting it. Or I can stay on leave for a while, until I feel ready to get back to work. Or I can go freelance. Or I can do none of those and figure something else out. I'm at an impasse with this, Meg. I don't know what to do. And after what happened in Istanbul, I find I don't really care. A brush like that makes you rethink a lot of things, and it makes you reprioritize, and frankly, you're part of that. Meg reread the last two sentences to make sure she had read them correctly. I think I would have told you these things I'm about to say anyway, even though I knew you were pulling away. Before the bombing, I might not have. After, I have to. I started drafting this letter this past weekend, actually, and then I got your phone message and the follow-up text, which made me feel a hell of a lot better about sending this. But I can't say I'm not feeling a lot of uncertainty doing it. I've been wanting to talk to you for so long now, maybe since the last time I actually saw you. I've wanted to reconnect with you for a while, and though I'd prefer to address this with you in person, I think maybe doing it this way first will give you some room to process. See that? I'm giving you room to freak out, and I'll totally understand if you do. Meg laughed a little. She'd been freaking out since she got Gina's birthday card. And if you do, I hope you know I'll talk to you about it. I'm here. All you have to do is call, or email, or hell, text me with a 1,000-word essay about your freakout. I want to get everything out in the open between us, and I hope you don't slide those walls up like you sometimes do. Go ahead and freak, Meg, but please leave the door open. She smiled. Easier said than done. I assumed you were still with Kate when I sent your birthday card this year, but that didn't change the fact that I really wanted to see you. Even if you were still with Kate, and blissfully happy with that arrangement, I still wanted to see you because I realized that I need you in my life, even if it's only as friends. Then you told me that you're not with Kate anymore, and I almost got on a plane to Denver. Ha, maybe I should have, huh? Oh well. I was ready to drive up to Laramie. I didn't know where your clinic was, but I know Laramie and it's not that big. I'm sure the first person I asked would have known how to find you. And then I stopped myself, because I didn't know where you were with everything. You were processing what happened with Kate, and it wasn't fair of me to force anything with you because I didn't want to be a rebound. Meg inhaled sharply, not sure she could believe what she was reading. She brushed at her eyes, which had filled with tears for reasons she couldn't name. Look, I know you need to deal with Kate. I know I probably still need to deal with Sharon in some ways, but I want to get to know you again, to see if maybe things could work between us. I can't believe I'm writing this. I'm freaking myself out here. Shit. Oh well, I need to say it, and I don't care how long it takes. I don't care if it's weeks or months or another 8 years. You're that important to me. I know there are a lot of logistics to think about. Careers, places, making sure we're not living in the past.
what we both want out of life and ourselves. I know that. I also know that I'm truly happy when I think about you, and when I know you're out there connected to me, however ephemerally. I want to try to work around all that and see where we could go.
So what do you say, cowgirl? Make a play for me? Bruised ribs and all?
Meg half laughed, half cried, and went 10 years back, remembering her birthday at the River Rest Bar when Gina followed her onto the patio after singing to her, and she asked her what a girl had to do to get Meg to make a play for her. Meg had teased her, told her to ask, and Gina did, and it was like the air between them burst into flames. She wiped her eyes. I've missed you. I still love you. I can't stop. I've tried. Believe me, I've tried. But I can't. So what the hell? I'm sorry if this is sudden and it fucks you up. I just needed to tell you. Take all the time you need on this. I know you'll get back to me either way. And if it fucks up your visit, well, I'll pay the cancellation fee and we can try again later. I hope you'll want to, in spite of all this revelation. Crazy in California, Gina. Meg clicked on reply and typed. Mary called me Tuesday night. She was concerned, and she had a right to be. I was pushing you away. I'm sorry. I thought you were still with Sharon, and I was having a hard time with that. Mary told me that you'd emailed me with the breakup news in October. I didn't get that email, and I was too big a coward to just outright ask you where things were with her, because I didn't want to know on some levels. I was enjoying reconnecting with you too much, and didn't want to consider that maybe you were still with Sharon, and really did just want to be friends only. And on other levels, I wondered if you wanted more than friendship, and why you were doing that if you were still with her. I feel like a major ass for not calling you. I was afraid. I'm still not sure why. There, I put that out in the open, and I've missed you too. So call me. P.S. Yes. She clicked on send, and then leaned back in her chair, totally unglued, excited, happy. Holy shit, she whispered. In a daze, she got ready for bed, not sure she'd actually sleep. Moonshine settled on his bed, and she gave him a goodnight pat before she set her alarm. She stared at the image of Gina that she kept on her bedside table for a long time, trying to get her heart to stop bull riding in her chest, trying to imagine what it was going to be like, building this beginning. Was she doing the right thing? Gina stared back at her, and most uncertainty vanished like mountain mist in the morning sun. She fell asleep with a picture on her chest. Chapter 24. A couple of cancellations came up the next day, which might have been a bad thing because Meg ended up with downtime, and she filled it with images of Gina and anxiety about what Gina would think about Meg's admission that she thought she might be trying something with her while she was still with Sharon. Regardless, she'd printed out Gina's email first thing that morning, and by the time noon rolled around, she'd probably read it 100 times. She tucked the email back into her satchel before she read it another 100 times and left her office to check on Kelly. Good work, Meg said as she inspected Kelly's syringes. And you know what to do now. Hey, Doc. Sandra poked her head through the swinging door. Her smile threatened to crack her makeup. Yeah? She didn't look up from the syringes.
Something just came for you.
Meg looked at her puzzled. Mail? That couldn't be it, she knew, because the mail came at 11 on Thursdays, and it was almost 2.
Nope. I think you'd better have a look.
Sandra raised her eyebrows, and her eyes seemed to sparkle. Meg shrugged and looked at Kelly. You okay?
Yep.
Good. When you're done there, do a follow-up with Jack Forster about his mare. Kelly smiled at her. Meg knew working with horses was Kelly's favorite thing to do, like so many of the rancher kids who had grown up out here. She clapped Kelly's shoulder and went back to the reception area.
So what? Oh my God.
She stared at the counter, at the vase filled with 12 deep red roses. Sandra hid another grin behind her hand, and Ginny had a, so what have you been up to expression on her face. You're sure they're for me? Meg asked. Sandra snickered behind her hand.
Well, I did check our employment roster, and so far, only one Dr. Meg Talmadge is on staff here, Ginny said,
looking at Meg over the rims of her bifocals. Meg approached the roses as if they were a wild animal that might bolt. Their rich, cool aroma filled the air the closer she got. She carefully extracted the small envelope from their depths and opened it so she could read the card within.
Waiting for a private moment to make that call. It can't come soon enough. Crazy for you in California, Gina.
Well, must be someone special, Ginny said as a flush raced down Meg's spine and painted her neck and cheeks with what she knew had to be bright red. Meg cleared her throat and busied herself putting the card back in the envelope. She slid it into her shirt pocket, just as Roy emerged from the nearby exam room with a whisper-thin woman and her obese Persian cat. His eyes widened at the sight of the roses, and when his gaze flicked to Meg, a little smile played at the corners of his mouth.
Huh, he said. Haven't heard that you're getting married, he continued. But sure looks like somebody's trying.
His smile broadened as he leaned on the counter while Sandra printed out the invoice for the woman and her cat. Another flush worked its way across her face.
Hey, Doc Roy,
Gary asked as he poked his head in from the back. He stopped when he saw the roses.
Dang, who are those for?
Doc Meg, Sandra said. The rest of us will just have to continue with our boring, mundane lives.
Dang,
he said again. Sandra nodded, grinning devilishly.
And they about match her face, huh, Ginny?
All right, Meg managed. Thank you for all the kind observations. Kelly appeared. She looked at the roses and at Meg.
Doc, is there something you want to tell us?
She asked, feigning innocence. Roy chuckled.
I reckon there might be. What do you say, Meg? Anything on your mind?
An image of Gina slowly unbuttoning her shirt in the light of a nearby candle as she sang Keb Mo's Dangerous Mood flashed in front of Meg's eyes and she coughed.
Oh my, I'd say that answers your question,
Ginny said as a round of laughter accompanied Meg's expression.
I tell you, Meg said as she valiantly tried to quell her embarrassment, but then I'd have to kill you.
And she picked the vase up off the counter and marched the roses past Kelly into the back toward her office, accompanied by a chorus of, oh. She retreated to her office and set the vase on her desk, grinning like an idiot. She read Gina's card again, not once, but several times.
Hey, Doc T, Meg turned at Haley's voice. Would it be okay if I hung out a little with Ginny and Sandra today? I'd like to see more about how the front end works.
Sure, take an hour with them, and then if you want, I've got a 2:30 feline checkup coming in to practice your bedside skills on.
Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
Thanks. She glanced at Meg's desk, and the roses caught her eye.
Oh, wow, she said. Can I?
She gestured for permission to touch them. Sure. Haley leaned in and sniffed, then carefully rearranged a few.
There. That'll help them have a little more space until you get them home. My mom says to keep roses like this in a shaded place. And when you get them home, cut a little more off the stems and put them in a bucket of hot water for a little bit. Then you're supposed to mix 2 teaspoons of Karo syrup. She always says Karo with another pint of hot water in the vase you're going to use. Oh, and don't let them sit on a windowsill in direct sunlight.
Good tips. Thanks. Your mom's into flowers?
Oh yeah, all kinds. But she really likes roses. I do too.
Haley's fingers toyed with one of the buttons on her lab coat.
I kind of like those 2-tone yellow and red roses you can get. They look sort of like fire. Those are a hybrid, and they're called Love and Peace. I always thought that was kind of cool, she added, wistful. I'm actually trying to grow some, but Wyoming isn't the best for certain types of roses. There's this other hybrid I'm going to try called Hot Cocoa. It has a really cool smoky brownish orange color.
Is there no end to your talents? Meg teased. Future vet and master rose gardener?
So has Haley managed to find out who they're from? Asked Ginny as she approached Meg's doorway.
Haley glanced from Ginny then to Meg, confused.
I'm teasing.
Ginny squeezed Haley's shoulder.
And my lips are sealed, Meg grinned, smug.
But I found out that Haley has a way with flora as well as fauna. Maybe we could open a flower shop in the back parking lot for extra income. Ginny shook her head and handed Meg a file.
Can you clarify the dosage on this patient?
To Haley, she said.
Ready for all the real work?
Yeah.
She turned and went after Ginny.
Oh, hey,
Meg said. Haley waited. I'm going out of town next weekend.
Thursday afternoon to Sunday evening. Any chance you can watch Moonshine for me? Don't worry about it if you can't.
That'd be great. Can I bring him here with me in the afternoons?
Absolutely. $30 a day sound reasonable?
You don't have to.
Yes, I do. I'll bring him and his food and meds in Thursday morning, along with his feeding instructions and medicine dosing. Kelly can show you how to do it if you're not sure. He gets a Medicam squirt in his mouth according to his weight every morning right after he eats. But I'll put all that on his instruction sheet. Oh, and I'll bring his bowl and bed. Check with Beth before you say yes. I don't want to be intruding on a date weekend or anything. If she's good with it, you can take him home with you Thursday.
Oh, yeah. I'll text her right now and let you know as soon as she gets back to me.
She followed Ginny out of Meg's office, and Meg stole another glance at the card that had come with the roses before she headed to the back to do some prep work. 10 minutes later, Haley interrupted her.
Hey, Doc. Beth says it's fine for Moonshine to stay with us. She's looking forward to it, because she misses having a dog.
Great. He'll never want to come home, Meg said with a grin. He has a way with the ladies. Haley smiled back.
So just give me instructions and his food and everything, and he'll be fine.
I have no doubt. And just check with Kelly or Roy if he gets sick or if he's acting like he's in pain. Kelly's worked with me on him. I think he'll be fine. He'll think he's on vacation.
I'll take good care of him.
I know. And Mark's got an interesting canine case coming in. You want in?
Oh, yeah, that'd be great.
Meg studied her for a moment. You holding up okay? She smiled.
Yeah, actually, I am. Better than I thought I would.
Did Bill not know that you and your mom were in contact?
No. When he told me to leave after high school, he said he'd better not find out that I was talking to my mom.
She shrugged.
Like I'd let that stop me. I wanted to make sure my mom was okay, and she wanted to make sure I was okay. Last month, my mom actually said she wanted to leave. I told her to let me know, and I'd help however I could. My sister said she would, too.
Well, you have a lot of people in your corner.
I guess I realized that. And I think that's why I'm doing better than I thought I would.
Meg smiled. Let's go check on this canine case. The next 2 hours passed with her coworkers making every show of avoiding the issue of the roses, much to Meg's amusement. She finished the day nonchalantly, letting them wonder, though she knew Ginny had probably surmised who the sender was. She left the clinic at 6, put the roses in her pickup, where she set the vase on the passenger seat roped into place with her lasso, which generally hung on the gun rack positioned over her sliding back window. She backed up, and with a major physical effort, kept herself from squealing out of the parking lot.
She sent me roses.
Shut the hell up!
Sean said with extra emphasis.
Roses?
Meg ran her fingers along the petals of one. She had set the vase on her coffee table so she could look at them while she sat on her couch.
Yep, a dozen. Red.
Red? Good God! At the clinic?
Yep. And yes, I don't think I've ever been that embarrassed in my natural-born life, but in a really good way.
Meg sighed and leaned back.
I think I'm going insane.
Yes, you are, Sean said gently, but it sounds good on you.
Meg heard something in the background. She waited.
Hell, I have to go, Sean said with a touch of annoyance. We're going to this dinner tonight that one of Ted's clients arranged. We have to go make nice and act like we care. I want to hear more, though. Every sordid detail of your dark lesbian life.
I'll see what I can do. Have fun and hi to that hunk you call a husband. Sean made kissing noises.
We are still on for tomorrow. No excuses. I also want to make sure you're okay after what happened.
Yes, we are still on. I've got stuff ready to go for the grill, and you can grill me too.
You know me too well. Did you get my favorite beer?
Of course.
And then, of course, I want all the details.
Yes, ma'am.
All right, have a good night. Bye.
Bye. Meg hung up and stared at the roses. Then she texted Gina. You around? It was just 7 in California. And if Gina still clung to old habits, she might be writing, something she tended to do in the evenings when she was on assignment. Or she might be back from that and out with friends. She'd text back when she had a chance. Meg left her phone on the arm of the couch and got up to clean up a bit in the kitchen. As she was finishing, her phone rang with the tone she'd programmed for Gina that morning, and she practically threw herself over the coffee table to get it.
Hey,
she answered, hoping she didn't sound like she'd just flung herself over furniture.
Hiya, cowgirl,
came Gina's greeting, and it washed over Meg like that Wyoming night 10 years ago beneath a slivered moon,
when Meg pushed Gina against the side of the Pathfinder and lost herself in the desire between them.
"I'm so glad," Gina started. "Hold on," she said, and Meg heard her addressing someone else. Then she came back on the phone. "I'm done with that assignment and in Sacramento for the weekend. You can imagine what that entails."
"I'm guessing you're not alone then."
"Bingo,"
Gina said, a smile in her voice.
"Well, technically I am alone now because I'm out back on the patio, but that doesn't guarantee anything."
"Knowing your family, if they came out there and you asked them to leave, that would only make them stay longer."
"You're racking up points," Gina said with a gentle teasing tone that always sent a flutter through Meg's chest. "And you're about to rack up a bunch more, because my mom just came out here with my dad. They suddenly felt the need to sit out here with their iced tea."
She sighed. "Oh, and of course Mary and Angelica are now out here."
"Hi, Meg,"
came the background greetings from at least two voices.
"Hell," Gina said with resignation. "Let me call you back later if that's okay."
"Don't worry about it, because all you need to do is listen."
"Okay."
Gina's voice was soft, but Meg heard the question in it.
"Yes," Meg said. "Yes to everything you asked. I've hated not having you in my life, and I've kicked myself for pushing you away."
"Meg, don't say anything," she interrupted sternly. "Listen."
She waited to make sure that Gina was following her instructions before she continued. "I know leaving was a decision we made together, but I also know it was one of the worst things that's ever happened to me. And I think I pushed harder than you did, and I'm sorry. I realize I've missed you every day since then. And I know I didn't let you in completely, and that I used that somehow to justify my part in ending things with you." She paused, gathering her thoughts. "I don't want to recreate the past. I'm happy sharing the memories with you and sorting through it, but I want the now, and I want the future."
She stopped to make sure Gina wasn't trying to say something.
"And I want to know who you are now, and I want you to know who I am. But I'd be lying if I said I wasn't scared. So I'm asking for your patience because maybe I need some help learning to let you in, and maybe I need some time adjusting to the fact that you're real. Can you do that?"
"Yes," Gina said quietly, almost reverently. "Weeks, months, years, I don't care. Whatever we need."
Meg closed her eyes, feeling pieces of herself fall together in a pattern at once comfortingly familiar, but exquisitely new. And she caught her breath at the sensation, at the enormity of second chances and the gifts of fate.
"I never stopped loving you,"
Gina inhaled sharply, the sound almost a snap against her teeth.
"And it's taken me till now to admit that. God, I tried to stop, but I couldn't. I can't," she smiled then. "I have no idea what I'm doing here. None. But it feels right. And sometimes I guess you just have to go on faith."
"Whatever it takes, Meg. I'll wait."
"Did your mom just hear you say that?"
"No, but Angelica and Mary did. They're giving me a thumbs up."
"That's heartening," Meg said with a laugh.
"And thanks for the roses," she added.
"When you meet the clinic staff, they'll tell you all about my reaction."
"You're welcome. That good, huh?"
"Better. I'm signing off now because I want your mom to have time to give you the third degree."
"Nice. Thanks, Meg," Gina said, joking. "I knew I could count on you to look after my personal welfare." "Anything you want me to tell her?"
"That I still love her daughter, and I hope she's okay with that."
"Good night, Gina. Get some rest. Doctor's orders. Bye." Meg hung up before Gina could respond, before they talked again for hours and hours into the night.
"I ain't 25 anymore," she thought wryly.
As much as she'd like to greet the sunrise with Gina's voice in her ear, regardless, Meg fell asleep with her anyway. Chapter 25. Moonshine was definitely moving better, Meg thought, as she watched him trotting along on their walk Saturday afternoon. The medicine was working, but she didn't want him to overexert himself, no matter how good he was feeling, so she turned toward home, thinking she might have one of the beers left over from last night. Sean had peppered her with questions about what had happened in the parking lot until she was satisfied that Meg was okay, and then in typical Sean fashion, she'd grilled her about her impending visit to California. With Sean around,
She didn't have to worry about bottling things up. Maybe she'd call Ginny, see if she wanted to come over for one of the leftover beers later on. She felt like she should be more social. She caught herself. Ginny might have her hands full with Laura. She'd call anyway to check in. Once back at home, Meg let Moonshine out the back and dialed Ginny's number. When she didn't answer, Meg left a message. Ginny was old school and didn't like to text much. She put her phone into the pocket of her shorts and put a load of laundry into the washer, then leaned outside to check on Moonshine, but she didn't need to worry. He was sound asleep on the patio in the shade of the big elm that spread its limbs protectively over half of the concrete in the back end of her house. Meg closed her eyes and put her face to the sun. Early summer in Wyoming was one of her favorite times of the year, and it always made her think about the first time she and Gina met. Her phone buzzed with a text message.
"Hey, cowgirl, feel like talking?"
She grinned, and butterflies bounced around her stomach, like when she and Gina were first together. She speed dialed her.
"Hey," came Gina's voice, and Meg melted.
"I was just thinking about you," Meg said, still grinning.
"What a coincidence. I was just thinking about you. Do you have a few minutes?"
"Yep. I was going to go through a round of vet paper drafts. You saved me from round two, a fate worse than mange."
"Worse than that? Damn. You want me to have a look at those papers? Maybe jazz them up a little? Of course, you'll end up with phrases like, knee bone connected to the leg bone, but I'm happy to help."
"I'll keep that in mind. Anything to keep you busy and off the streets? Where are you?"
"Still in Sacramento. I'm humoring my mom."
"Oh?"
"Doctor checkup yesterday. I'll head back to LA probably tomorrow."
She lowered her voice to a stage whisper.
"Because if I don't, I will lose the other half of my mind."
Meg laughed. "Ah, family.
Don't get me started."
"Okay, so where exactly are you?" Meg asked, trying to picture her.
"On the back patio, catching some rays. Seemed like the California thing to do."
"And where is everyone else?"
"Mary's out shopping, and then she'll probably go back to her place. Angelica went home, and my parents are with my grandparents. I have the whole house to myself. Well, the dogs and I do."
"A bit of peace, then. So tell me how the doctor checkup went." Meg went out onto the patio and sat down in one of the three plastic chairs that stood in a circle near the barbecue grill.
"Fine. Things seem to be healing up pretty well. Ribs are still a little sore, so I'm taking it easy in that regard. My leg is still tender. If I'm on my feet too much or walk too much, it lets me know about it."
"Listen to it. Doctor's orders." Gina laughed softly.
"It occurred to me that I really don't know much about this doctor side of you. I'm looking forward to getting to know it."
"You might get tired of hearing about it."
"Never."
She was quiet for a few moments.
"I miss you."
Meg closed her eyes, warmth flooding through her veins that had nothing to do with the afternoon sun.
"I've missed you for so long that it's a part of me in some ways now," Gina said. "I wanted to tell you the last time I saw you."
Meg thought back 5 years earlier. "I was seeing Rhonda then." She remembered Gina meeting her and Sean at a restaurant in Fort Collins.
"I know, so I didn't. But every time I emailed you or sent you a card, I wanted to tell you."
"You were wearing your hair shorter then." Meg adjusted her position slightly in the chair. "And you gave me a Hawaiian shirt on that visit. One actually from Hawaii."
"I did," Gina said. "It was mostly dark blue with little Aloha girls all over it. Blues and grays bring out your eyes. I did that on purpose," she chuckled. "You put it on over your t-shirt, and I kept staring at you all through dinner."
"I still have that shirt, and I still wear it."
"Really?"
Gina sounded surprised. "I have everything you ever gave me. All your cards, all your letters and emails, everything. I keep a file of your stories that I print out from the web."
Gina didn't respond right away. "I keep a file too," she finally said. "I wondered if we ever got to a point where we talk about things. If you'd think I was stalking you if I told you that."
Meg heard the smile in Gina's voice and she grinned. "Hell, I'd have to admit it too. It just, I don't know. It made me feel better to have things like that. Things I knew you'd touched or wrote." Meg sighed, then a mixture of regret and hope. "I didn't see anyone for 2 years after we broke up." She bit her lip, a sudden wave of emotion engulfing her chest that was almost painful, that filled her eyes with tears.
"I didn't either,"
Gina said, tone soft. Meg pictured her sitting on a similar patio, just a couple states over.
She wanted desperately to hold her, to feel her, solid and familiar pressed against her.
I'm sorry. Meg's throat tightened and her chest contracted. I'm so sorry.
She knew Gina would hear the impending tears in her voice. It's okay, she said in that way Meg remembered, the way that always made her feel better. I'm sorry, too, for my part in what happened. But here we are now. That's what I'm interested in. She paused. Look, I know it's kind of soon after Kate. I know you need to get that figured out. That's okay. I'm not going anywhere. And if what you need right now is a friend, I can do that, too. I'll wait. However long it takes, I don't care. All I know is I can't be without you in my life. I tried it, and I can't. Meg rubbed her forehead with her free hand as her eyes filled with tears. She got up suddenly and went to the bathroom for a box of tissues. You okay? Gina asked, concern in her voice. Meg?
I'm better than okay, Meg managed as she wiped her eyes. Can I ask you something?
Anything.
Why did you break up with Sharon?
I wasn't in love with her. Gina's tone was matter of fact. Sharon's a good person. We had some good times. But after a year, I just didn't feel for her what she wanted me to feel. And it was clear we were in two different places going two different directions.
Is that what you said in the email?
Meg threw the tissue away in the kitchen and pulled another one out of the box. No, I just said it didn't work out, and I asked if you'd be interested in maybe getting together after the new year sometime. That I'd be trying to get stateside. She laughed. Now that I think about it, I think it might have sounded like a come on. But I did tell you to say hi to Kate. Meg reached for another tissue, then changed her mind, and just took the whole box back to the patio and sat down again.
Kate started leaving in October. It had been over for a while, months.
What happened?
Same thing like with you and Sharon. I wasn't in love with her, and we were different on lots of levels. She didn't understand the ranching thing. I can't really blame her. It's a tough lifestyle to figure out, especially if you haven't ever lived it.
You are the ranching thing, Gina said. It's in your blood. It's a big part of who you are. I can't imagine you any other way.
Meg pulled another tissue out of the box and wiped her eyes again. Damn, I'm turning into a big old baby, she muttered.
Gina laughed. You've always had that side. It's one of the things I love about you. Remember that first year we were together? It was almost a year after we met, and I came to visit right at branding time. Holy shit, I have never worked so hard in my life.
Meg smiled. You were pretty tired. On that last day working, you fell asleep on the ride home. I had to ride close to make sure you didn't fall out of your saddle, but you did a damn good job.
She remembered watching Gina doze, head nodding in rhythm with the horse's gait. Even sleeping, Gina stayed in the saddle. She had a lot of natural talent for riding.
Well, thanks. I remember watching you cutting calves from the herd, you and Rusty. God, he was a great horse. You had him trained so well. You had to chase that one calf and you roped it left-handed from the saddle. Rusty did what he was supposed to do, and you were out of that saddle like lightning, like you were flying. You had that calf trussed and ready in 6 seconds. It was a thing of beauty watching you. I felt like my chest was going to burst open, and I just wanted to shout, "That's my fucking girlfriend! Uh-huh, that's right!"
Meg flushed, embarrassed, but also aroused. She admonished herself not to think about that, not to go down that road, yet. And Mark had that branding iron. You had your leather gloves on, and you reached for an iron to singe that calf, and Mark jerked when Bugoff went flying through after another calf, and the iron bumped you on your arm. I knew it hurt. It raised a huge welt, but you didn't say a word, just went about your business.
Her voice trailed off. And then you cried when I left. My sweet, tough, badass, softy girlfriend.
I love the contradictions.
She stopped and cleared her throat.
Shit. I didn't mean to make assumptions. I was just hell.
A rush of warmth started at the top of Meg's head and roared down to her shoes. It's a nice assumption. I like it.
Jesus, I'm all off track here.
Meg grinned, because Gina was rarely flustered.
All right, Gina said in a tone like an announcement. Okay, I just wanted to tell you that I know you might be working on some things, and it's okay. I'm not going anywhere.
You'd better not. I don't want you screwing yourself up in your healing. When your leg bothers you, rest. Keep your ass planted in the chair for a while. You know,
think I really do like this bossy side of yours. When did you acquire that?
Meg laughed.
Bossy? Really? Not to suggest you weren't already assertive, but I like the authoritative tone you have with that now. That school suited you.
So I'm told.
Gina was silent for a few moments. It's been amazing talking to you. I can't believe it sometimes. I can't believe that I can pick up a phone and call you and hear your voice. And I can't believe that I'll see you soon, she laughed. I might pass out. Seriously. I'll totally pass out when I see you. In fact, I'm going to pass out right now just thinking about it.
Meg laughed too.
So if I hear a weird noise right now, it's me, falling right out of my chair. Make sure you don't land on your bad leg.
Nice. Thanks for your concern.
No problem.
Damn. I hate hanging up when I'm talking to you. But I know you've got things to do, and I, of course, have nearly perfected the art of sitting on my ass, contrary to what you might think. I'm almost as good as my great-uncle Gregorio, who I think turns 183 this month.
Meg chuckled. I miss you, she said. And I am so looking forward to seeing you. Now get some rest.
Yeah. Okay, Doc, she said in a long-suffering tone.
But Meg heard the teasing behind it. And it was just like 10 years ago, when they were first seeing each other, when saying goodbye took almost as long as the phone call itself. She smiled at the memory, stood, and looked up at the sky, wanting to bury her face in Gina's hair and run her lips down her neck. She wouldn't say that, however. Too soon, maybe. And maybe she shouldn't be hoping about that.
I'll talk to you later,
Gina said with a warmth Meg remembered only too well. Yes, you will.
Bye, cowgirl.
They hung up, and Meg inhaled. The smells of new grass and warm earth filling her senses. She brought her phone to her lips and rested it there, eyes closed.
You just know, Sean had said. You just know if it's the right fit.
She opened her eyes and stared at the sky, a pale blue pockmarked with clouds. Gina was looking at the same sky at that moment, and there were only two states between them. Meg groaned softly. Thursday taunted her, but thinking about its approach sent electric butterflies through her abdomen. She put her phone in her pocket, grabbed the box of tissues, and went back inside, glad she hadn't brought up what had happened earlier that week. Time enough to talk that out later. Chapter 26. Monday was uncharacteristically slow, so Meg checked her email. Phil and Alicia were planning their move for the middle of July, probably closer to the third week, and were planning to go to the ranch for a couple of days. He also wanted her to know how much he appreciated her and Stan, and he was looking forward to returning. No mention of his family. Meg suspected it had gone about as well as he'd said it would. And speaking of family, an email from Irene sat in her inbox. She imagined it glaring at her, like a little goblin with big fangs. She opened it, and by the third sentence wished she hadn't. She could hear Irene's tone in the words, a mixture of recrimination and self-righteousness. Why couldn't Meg just try a session with a therapist Ed knew? Why couldn't she at least call him? Why this? Why that? And why the fuck had Meg opened this message? She deleted it, then dragged it out of her trash file and wrote a succinct reply. No thanks. She clicked send and deleted the original message again. Then she went into her trash file and deleted it permanently, as if that would somehow make things better, would somehow erase the fact that she'd read it. She rubbed her eyes, pissed and hurt, but also sad that things had come to this between them. Doc, she looked up at Kelly.
Your 1 o'clock's here. Exam room 2. Be right there.
Kelly nodded and hesitated, as if sensing the mood Meg was in.
Okay,
she said, and retreated into the corridor. Meg stood and took a couple of deep breaths, trying to shake the chill that had come over the afternoon. Animals to check, she told herself. That's the work to be done right now. She forced herself to relax. There was nothing she could do about her mom, but there was a lot she could do right here, and she needed to get her head in the game. Fortunately, the rest of the day passed the way she liked it to. No emergencies, and animals with things she could fix. She left work at 6, and after taking moonshine for a walk, she went for a run around the neighborhood, which cleared her head even more. Her phone beeped with a text message while she was eating a salad for dinner. She checked it and smiled, but finished her salad before she called Gina.
Hey, cowgirl. Happy Monday.
Same to you. What are you doing?
Just finished up a story and sent it off. And I did apply for the stateside position to see how I stack up. They already know me, so they'll probably call me for an interview.
Meg braced the phone on her shoulder as she cleaned the big bowl she'd used for the salad. And if you get it?
I'll cross that river when I get there.
So you're still not sure you want this position?
I'm not sure I want to keep doing what I'm doing, period, Gina said. I've had a bad case of ambivalence for a couple of years now.
Do you want to keep writing? Meg leaned back against the counter.
Yes, I'm damn sure about that. I just don't think I want to do this traveling journalist thing. Or maybe I don't want to do it overseas. I don't know.
Maybe you just need a vacation, Meg smiled. I almost said break, but thought you might not appreciate it, since you almost got one. More than one.
Gina laughed. That's the truth.
More details, please, about your healing. You can tell me. I'm a doctor, you know. Use words like fetlock, and I'll know exactly what's going on. She thought about Gina's eyes and how they sparkled when she flirted.
That's kind of sexy, using vet terms like that.
Gina's tone was playful.
So far, so good. Bruises are healing up, ribs still hurt, but not anything like they did. Doctor said a couple more weeks, but even then I'll probably still have a little discomfort.
Ribs take a while. Don't do anything crazy.
Like try out for the Olympic beach volleyball team?
Yeah, like that.
Damn, I was so hoping this year would be my gold year too.
Meg laughed. How about your head? We haven't talked about that.
Fucked up.
She frowned. What do you mean? Is the wound not healing?
Oh yeah, that part's fine. In a psychological sense.
What's going on? Gina didn't respond for a while, but Meg kept quiet too.
I've had a few bad dreams, Gina finally said, about what happened. And yeah, loud noises kind of startle me, but I heard lots of explosions and shit while I was overseas. I guess it's finally getting to me. And I saw a lot of really bad stuff, Meg. Bad. Sometimes that bothers me.
How?
Certain things trigger certain memories.
A knot tightened in Meg's gut. Do you have dreams about the other stuff, too?
Yeah, not often. But enough that I think I'm going to see somebody about it. I don't want shit to build up in me, and I worry that it might.
That's a good idea, Meg said quietly. I'll help however I can.
Coming to visit will help immensely.
Meg hesitated with her response.
Meg, second thoughts?
No. I guess I'm just wondering about, sleeping arrangements.
Gina chuckled. Not to worry. I know it's a little weird for you, coming to my stomping grounds like this. If you remember, my place has two bedrooms. One's my office, but it's got one of those futon couches. And if even that's too weird for you, that's okay. There are a couple of nice hotels pretty close. I have no problem driving you to either of them. I just want you to be comfortable and not feel pressured to do anything. And for the record, I'd be perfectly happy just talking. Maybe holding your hand for 100 years, if you're comfortable with that.
Meg grinned. I think I can handle that.
But only if you're comfortable. I'll be content just being in the same room with you. No expectations, okay? Let's just plan on spending some time, see how things go. Speaking of which, is there anything in particular you want to do in LA?
The beach would be nice.
Done. Anything else?
Let's play by ear, see what comes up. Meg went back into the house and rubbed her feet on the kitchen rug. Moonshine padded past her into the living room.
Okay, so I'm nervous again,
Gina said in a rush. I am too, but excited. Meg shut the back door and locked it, then went into the living room and sank onto the couch. Moonshine had already made himself at home on the other end.
Damn, what'll I wear? Gina muttered. Fuck, I'll have Grace over. She has style. She'll fix me up.
Meg grinned. She's a straight girl. Maybe Mary should pick your outfit.
Good point. She's not as sexy butch as I am, but still.
Meg choked on a laugh. I won't let her know you said that.
Please, she knows it. I'm the hotter of the two of us,
Gina said, humor in her voice.
But sadly, I'll probably still have to wear shorts because my pants still rub this gash on my leg wrong. Do you think they make tuxedo shorts?
I have no doubt that if they do, they're to be found in California. And I don't care what you're wearing. I just want to see you.
I know. I'm just really nervous. Honestly, I haven't been this nervous since the night I sang the Dixie Chicks song at River Rest.
You were nervous then? Why? Not because I was going to sing in public. That's not a big deal for me. It was because I was singing to you.
Seems to me it turned out all right.
Meg put her feet up on her coffee table, remembering how it felt to hear Gina turn a country song into a blues grind, and how it felt to kiss her for the first time under a Wyoming moon. Would she feel the same when she was in Gina's presence?
It did, Gina said, and it still is. Okay, cowgirl. Before I forget, I'll pick you up at the airport, so don't worry about getting a cab or anything.
You sure? What if you're working on something?
Nope, I'm sure. Of course I'm going to be there to pick you up. Thanks to modern technology, there are these things called text messages that we can use to coordinate our locations.
Meg laughed. Okay.
All right, cowgirl. I need to get some writing done. Thanks for talking.
Same to you. Sleep well.
You too. Night.
Night. Meg hung up.
See you soon, she said softly.
Moonshine looked at her. He seemed to be smiling.
Yeah, whatever, bud.
She stroked his head, thinking about the first time she and Gina were together, and the memories brought heat and anxiety. Was it okay to think about being with Gina physically? Or was she getting way too far ahead of herself? What if Gina wasn't sure about that? And what if, when they saw each other, Gina didn't feel that way? She gave Moonshine a final pat and stood. She needed to quit thinking about this and just go with the flow. Like Gina said, no expectations. Too bad she couldn't convince herself.
The wound on the terrier's back was about the size of the head of a nail, the tissue puffy around the edges.
Okay, Jared, Meg looked up at him. How did Misty get this?
He had a scruffy musician look to him, and she suspected he was a student at the university. Haley had her hands on either side of Misty's ribcage. The dog probably only weighed 20 pounds soaking wet. She was remarkably calm, probably because of Haley's dog whisperer abilities.
We noticed it yesterday, he said, worried. We don't know for sure.
It's a puncture wound, and it's infected. Did she ever get out of the yard? She looked at him and then at the woman with him. Shelley, she remembered. He glanced at Shelley, and they both nodded. Do you have a gate or fence that she crawls under?
Yeah, a gate. An old wooden thing, he answered. We've tried putting milk crates and stuff next to it, but she usually moves them or digs around them.
Haley gently stroked Misty's head as she listened.
Okay, Meg said. When you get home, go have a look at that gate. Chances are you'll see some old nails sticking out. My bet's on one of those. Pull them out or bend them so she can't hurt herself again, and get yourself some firewood logs and put them against the bottom of the gate so she can't get out. Lie them on their sides. Is there any way you can put a little sandbox or something for her in the backyard?
Shelley nodded.
Put a bunch of her bones and treats and stuff in that sandbox area and let her dig in that. Keep hiding things in there for her to find so she gets in the habit of sticking around and digging there. Terriers are escape artists and they're pretty smart. They get bored, so you have to keep them busy. And the best way to do that is find parts of your yard that you don't care get dug up and hide things for Misty to find. Make it a game.
Cool, thanks, he said, smiling with obvious relief.
All right, I'm going to take Misty in the back so we can shave her fur around the nasty, and then we have to numb it up and clean it out. I'm also going to give her a shot of penicillin to help with that infection. Has she been on that before?
Yes, Shelley said. She didn't have any problems.
Good. I'll also give you some salve to put on it, and you'll have to put a gauze pad on there and wrap it with gauze every night before she goes to bed. Try that for 3 days. If you think it's getting worse, come back. If it's getting better, do the gauze and salve thing for another 3 days. In the meantime, go to Walgreens or something and buy her a baby t-shirt. That'll keep her from messing with the sore, and it'll help keep it clean.
Meg gently picked Misty up and cradled her in her arms.
Have a seat in the lobby, and I'll be out in a few.
Thanks, Shelley said, looking as relieved as Jared.
We'll see you in a bit, sweetie, she said to the dog.
Meg opened the door into the back. She handed Misty to Haley so she could numb the dog up and shave a patch on her back. 10 minutes later, she and Haley carefully cleaned the wound. Meg hummed soulfully by Katie Curtis as she worked, and Haley stroked Misty, keeping her calm. The song had been on her mind all morning.
All right, have a look and see what you think, Meg said, after she'd irrigated the wound and allowed it to dry a bit.
Haley picked up the magnifying glass she'd put out with the cleaning supplies, a numbing agent, and examined the wound.
Looks clean,
She handed it back to Meg, who also looked. You're right, I think we got it. Cool. Let me give her the penicillin, then you salve her and wrap her up. Meg administered the shot, then smiled at Haley. Show me some of them skills, girl. She stepped back to give her room to work. Nice, good job, she said as Haley finished wrapping the band of gauze around Misty's back over the pad on the wound. Make sure you give Jared and Shelly a card in case they need to bring Miss Thing here back. Take her on out. Oh, and take a tube of furosin as well as some gauze pads and gauze wrap. A couple days' supply on that.
Sure thing, Doc.
You're doing some good work here. Meg smiled as she pushed through the door into the lobby to let Jared and Shelly know that Haley would be out with Misty. She handed her right up to Sandra for invoicing and went back to her office. She had 30 minutes to eat her lunch before her next appointment. As she munched on her sandwich, her phone dinged with a text. She checked it and called Sean.
Dr. Horsechick, you never call. You never write since some wench from California reappeared in your life, she lamented.
Meg laughed.
Spare me. Ted was out of town. Then you had that 2-day seminar in Denver.
How'd it go?
Blah, 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 vet stuff. Blah, blah, blah. But enough about me. Provide insight into your far more interesting life.
Are you at work?
Of course. Lunch break. So come on, spill it.
Meg smiled. When did I talk to you last?
Sunday.
That's what I thought. And that's only the day before yesterday.
And how many times have you talked to her since that amazing email she sent?
Twice. Sean giggled.
Uh-huh. Can I presume that things are still going well?
You can, and you'd be right.
So how are you doing? You're going to see her in 2 days.
Meg didn't respond for a few moments. Excited and nervous, but we did talk about that, and she doesn't have an issue with me staying in a hotel if I feel weird.
Good.
She asked what sorts of things I'd like to do in LA,